Brad, I made an old man purchase the other day.
Wait, you? No.
This is shocking, I know.
What you got?
I bought, so last year or earlier this year when we went up to the mountains, the place we stayed didn't have like whole house heat. So they had a wood burning stove in the center of the house that heated up the whole downstairs when you were in there and pumping wood into the stove. But when you went to bed, it went dark and it got cold, and it was really cold up there. So they had these heated mattress pads under the bed. I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever had. I got into the bed. It was super cozy. It stayed really warm all night. It was beautiful. Absolutely wonderful.
You couldn't tell there was wiring in there.
No, no feeling of wiring whatsoever. And you're thinking about right now about like the electric blankets of our youth that you get in and it would be like 1,000 degrees under there.
Yes.
This just puts a little bit extra, like when it warms up the bed, you hit it in the preheat mode and it toasts up the bed really nicely. And then it cools down and it's just been a little bit of extra heat in there for those nights when you're chilly.
Does the heat stay in there?
Well, I mean, that's what the blankets do. That's up to the blankets.
Depends on your bedding, right?
Yeah. What's your bedding sitch? You get comfortable. We got to get a new comforter, a new duvet.
Did we talk about this recently? My bamboo. Oh yeah.
We talked about your bamboo. Yeah.
I need to vent heat.
Yeah. See, I like to keep it in. I need feathers. I need some sort of blanket on top. I got the whole thing. Anyway, it's real cozy and good. And it's really, really hard to get out of bed in the morning. If that thing is like, if I wake up and I'm a little chilly, I just roll over and hit the button for a second. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's the stuff right there.
You're just because you're all mosty toasty in there.
I am the toastiest mostiest.
Well, is this an old man purchase? I need to buy some polyester quilt batting.
What? Well, like just naked?
Our what? Yeah,
naked batting.
That's totally a thing.
Just a sack of batting.
Okay. Have you ever rejuvenated, revitalized, resurrected couch cushions
before? I have reupholstered things, but I don't think I've ever done a couch.
You ever had a couch long enough that the cushions just start to sag, like the foam core just starts losing its spring?
Oh, yeah. That's when it's time to get rid of the couch and get a new one.
Well, the couch is still in good shape. Well, okay. A, the couch is still in good shape.
Yeah.
Other than the cushions.
Yeah.
B, I'm sure as hell not buying a new couch when we're like teetering on the brink of moving out of here at some point.
Yeah. I've kept a couch for way too long because I've been on the teetering of moving. I'm like, I'm not going to move this couch.
Like I've suspended all major furniture purchases because who the hell wants to buy new furniture and then immediately move it?
Yeah, so why don't you just take them to an upholstery shop? They'll redo them for you.
Isn't this what Amazon is for now? What if I just spent $60 on some quilt batting and some spray adhesive and did it myself?
So the spray adhesive I've done a lot with because you use that to fix like vinyl where it falls off the inside of your car. And my last car, the vinyl on the doors kept peeling off for some reason. So I would spray adhesive it back on. Thanks, Ford. The rebuilding the cushions I've never done. That always seemed complicated to me.
It's just layer it on, spray it, stick it, shove it, zip it. Good.
I feel like you're going to end up with a lumpy place for your butt to go though.
Possible. Possible. Well, the idea is you cram it so full that it kind of expands inside the
bag
and fills it out.
I think you're firmly into a place where I would trust an expert to do the work that I want done. If I liked the couch. If I feel like the couch is something I'm keeping longer, I would pay them to redo it. And I feel like the couch is on the end of days and I just need something to last long enough for me to move and buy a new couch, then I would probably do it myself. Let me ask you a further question. Do you even need a couch?
What?
Why not just put a couple of comfortable chairs in there? Get a recliner, get a fancy gamer chair. I don't care. Whatever. A
couple of gamer chairs, living room gamer chairs. Yeah,
what about those moon chairs? The tilt back ones, like the ones that are zero gravity chairs?
Oh, God, the orbital lounger?
Yeah.
Did you ever sit in that thing?
Yeah, that thing was awesome.
That thing just took up space in the basement.
I used to sit in that and I'd grab my laptop and sit over there and just do work. It was great.
In Sausalito?
Yeah.
We had the orbital lounger was downstairs in the law office.
Didn't it end up in the engineering corner? It was in the dark maybe? Part of the office, I think.
Did it get moved to Front Street?
I think it got moved to Front Street because that's where I sat in. I never came.
Okay.
We weren't allowed downstairs when we were in Sausalito. You guys only for podcasts. You guys were too cool.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I was afraid. Well, I was afraid. I was like, I don't want to bother the giant bomb guys. They're too cool.
That's right. We're big, important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big, important internet people. But no, you could, you, who says, what law said we have to have a couch and a couple of chairs and a coffee table in your living room? You could have four chairs. I don't care.
Look, I can't lie across four chairs the way that I can lie across one.
That's
couch.
Why you get a recliner. Then you just pop, bump, bump, full recline.
Look, man, my living room, my business.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad. Hello. I don't know which tech catastrophe to pick from to talk about this week, although we have pre-chosen. But I just wanted to say, boy, there's a lot going on.
Shout out to FTX. That's what you're saying.
Dude, like between the Twitter, okay, hang on. We need to come up with a term.
Nope.
Twitterpocalypse is too played. I'm trying to think.
Nope. We're not going to call it Twittergate or anything stupid like that. We're just going to call it Elon's $44 billion mistake.
How about this? The Twitastrophe?
Oopsie.
Between the Twitter chaos, the midterms,
yeah,
and now the FTX collapse.
I'm pretty pleased with the midterms. I've got to be honest. That's not a debacle. Yeah. That worked out as hoped.
Like that's pure Schadenfreude at this point. Like I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying here are now three extremely chaotic and like kind of dramatic wild events going on simultaneously, and bouncing between reading long deep dive articles on all three of them back and forth is like making my head spin.
Well, first off, we don't usually do current events. So this week, the Twitter stuff seemed and honestly, the FTX too had the Twitter stuff not happen seems relevant enough. So FTX, if you don't know, is a large crypto trading
exchange
that seemed like it was backed by actual value. And it turns like most crypto was backed by nothing. It's collapsing in a most like really visible public way.
Oh yeah. Well, but I mean like there's a bunch of like very cliched bullet points about it. Like the type of stuff you would see on Silicon Valley, the show.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Except playing out in real life. Like the founder is like, he might be in his mid 30s now, but I think he was like in his 20s when he started it.
Yep.
Like giant mop of hair. Like wears shorts and t-shirts and sneakers on stage at conferences. Like
he allegedly did the original pitch to the Sequoia, the venture capital fund that backed him whilst playing a game of League of Legends.
Oh yeah.
And yes, ganking totally. People.
Like I saw a quote from whoever it was at Sequoia who talked to him originally when they set the whole thing up, who I feel embarrassed for this person. They were like, it occurred to me that I was speaking to the first future trillionaire. It was just like the most breathless nonsense. But
well, so anyway,
real quick before we move on to the actual topic, which is Twitter, they run that thing out of a multi-million dollar penthouse in the Bahamas, which is a tax haven.
Of course.
And there's like 10 of them and they're all super young and they're apparently all romantically involved with each other. Like they're running this like I think FTX was valued at like $36 billion at its height.
Yeah.
And it was literally like 10 recent college grad programmers and finance types.
Perfect.
On an island tax haven, and now all the money is gone, and also a bunch of it got hacked and stolen.
It's probably fine.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, the contest this week was to see who can piss away billions of dollars fastest. I think in the speed race, I'm going to say FTX probably is the winner, right?
I think like in pure financial terms, yes, I would say that the, roughly 15 years of social cachet that Twitter has built up that is being flush down the toilet and moment by moment like that makes it a little fuzzier.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're looking at like who can destroy the most long-term value, I didn't know what FTX, I mean, I knew what FTX was, but I hadn't paid any attention to it because I don't pay attention to crypto stuff.
Same.
Like the Twitter, I knew what Twitter was obviously.
Yes. Yes. That's my point.
So
Twitter is a cultural institution that is rapidly being dismantled, I would say.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about Twitter is it's been a cultural institution from the beginning almost. And it's always been a shitty business. Like they've never been able to like Facebook. There was a point where you're like, they're never going to make money on Facebook. I have no idea how this works. But then all of a sudden out of nowhere, Facebook started making billions of dollars. And they're like, we're just going to be able to let you advertise to specific people. Right. And I don't mean like a class of people. I mean, like, if you want to advertise to a guy who's 47 years old and lives in Pacifica, California and wears glasses, they can probably find me. Right.
Right. Or even more to the point, if you want to add, if you're a seller of mattress pads and you want to advertise exclusively to people who our algorithms tell us are actively in the process of looking for a mattress pad.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Well, whereas Twitter, when you'd buy ads on Twitter, if you got too specific, like this is a game I like to play when I'm in the ad buying setup, and anybody can make an ad account and do this. I like to see if I can find myself, right? Or find my parents. And when you get too specific on Twitter, they're like, hey, that's too specific. We don't let you advertise to that few a number of people. So
wait, can anybody just access this interface?
You have to agree with terms of service and a contract probably.
Huh. Okay.
But yeah, anybody can access those interfaces. It turns out they want to sell. If you want to buy ads, they're willing to sell ads to you, it turns out. So anyway, earlier this year in January, Musk bought a bunch of outstanding Twitter stock at a fairly low price and ended up with about 9% of the company, as one does.
Was there any print? So my memory of this whole, I think we're going to like briefly run through the absurd timeline of events of the last few months.
I think it would be constructive, because especially the last couple of weeks have been the kind of weeks where you look up and you're like, oh yeah, that was a month ago. And then you look at the calendar, you're like, oh no, that was 3 days ago.
Dude, I am having that experience on the time scale of days to hours at this point.
Yeah, it's
quite literally, it's like, you know, name any one of the 24 things that's happened since he took over, and like I can read about that the next day and think it was a week ago.
Yeah, it's. But I mean, and I think before we do this, we should maybe like, why does Twitter matter? Like that's I was going down this whole thing. I've been thinking about Twitter a lot this last couple of weeks, obviously. But like, why does Twitter matter?
I think the brevity of the brevity and simplicity of the posts is still crucial to why it is such a kind of thought center.
I also think it's the verified, they were early on verification. And sure, as a result, a lot of like everything, obviously famous people are there, but also like government entities are there, you know, the Department of Parks and the My Water Board post stuff on Twitter when they're having problems. You know, it's one of the ways they notify people of issues.
Yeah. So trending topics also were an early component of exposing people. I mean, yeah, whatever. I mean, say what you want about them, but like they were an early component of exposing you to like, here's what people are talking about in a very like everything on Twitter is distilled in a way that I don't feel like something like Facebook is.
Yeah. The fact that it has to be short means that people, even if you make a thread, you make a list of paragraphs, it's impossible to do a wall of text on Twitter, which is Facebook with the wall of text seems to be the default way to communicate for a lot of people.
Right.
So I mean, I think my answer to that question is probably that it's become a default form of communication for a lot of businesses and politicians and celebrities and musicians and pretty much everybody but the visual artists and I mean Instagram has taken over some of this obviously over the last few years, but also the fact that it was reverse chronological sorted for a long time meant that there was no algorithm interference in what you saw. Yeah. That's changed, but you can still set it to be reverse chrono if you want.
So what I was going to say was my memory of all this stuff really starts in April when he made the ridiculous offer to buy.
So the first I saw about it was when he bought the stock and the board got nervous.
So that's what I'm saying is that, you know, in going through this timeline, I remembered like, oh yeah, he did buy a bunch of stock in January. But that's what I was going to ask was there any prelude to that? Like any bloviating from him, or like, is there any like awareness of why he had made that initial stock purchase? Cause it seems like his, you know, soapbox free speech absolutism really didn't super pick up until like March, April when he actually made the offer. Well,
okay. So the thing to remember here is that Elon Musk's history is that he worked at a company that invented money, but on the internet. Right. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, they got bought by PayPal or eBay. The company he bought got merged with PayPal, and then PayPal got bought by eBay, but he was sacked. Maybe not exactly in that order.
Oh, was he sacked after
I think he was sacked purchase? just before, but he still made money on it. I don't know the specifics of that. I don't care.
Anyway, the eBay acquisition of PayPal is what gave the world Elon Musk and Peter Thiel. So thank you.
Yeah. eBay. Good job, eBay. But the point is, it's not like Bezos, where Bezos had 10 years where everybody's like, this Amazon thing is a complete waste of time. They're never going to make money, blah, 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 blah. And he had to maintain the company through that. Right. Like 3 years is no time in terms of like how long you have to keep people working together and supporting. So it's not like it's exceptional management skill or whatever. It's just, hey, they had enough money to make it 3 years and then somebody bought them for a shitload of money. When you look at how he's used Twitter in the post Tesla era, you know, when he bought his way into Tesla and then the stuff he's done pumping and dumping stock and crypto and stuff like that on Twitter in the last few years, he probably has made more money on that than he did on PayPal. Right. Like,
sure.
More of his wealth has come from his use of Twitter to engage an audience, to do things that he wants them to do that manipulate the price of different assets, has made him a shitload of money over the last few years. So in that sense, spending half of his fortune to buy the thing that made him more than half of that fortune kind of makes sense.
Sure. His manipulations notwithstanding, I mean, my understanding is that, like, just by automaker standards, Tesla is like wildly, wildly overvalued.
Oh yeah. Right? It's worth more than all the other US car manufacturers combined.
Yeah. That's
I mean, maybe not now, cause it's dropped a lot in the last couple of months, but
yes, it's tanked this year.
Well, but like, when you look at the number of cars they ship and the value of the stock, I mean, we're not analysts, whatever.
Yeah.
It's wildly overpriced. Anyway, there's also some legal stuff coming on him. There's a criminal probe coming at Tesla from the Department of Justice, I think. I can't remember about Tesla's auto driving stuff. So good news on all fronts for Elon. Anyway, mm-hmm. The point is, when he bought 9% of the company, the Twitter board looked at how much money he had and the outstanding number of shares and were like, oh shit, we're a hostile takeover target, which means, you know, he would just go start buying stock on the market until he owned 51% or 50.00001%. And then he would sack everybody on the board. So they did a poison pill clause. And what it says is basically that if any one shareholder gets more than X percentage of the shares, you offer all of the shareholders more shares at a discount that effectively dilute the shares held by the entity doing the takeover. So what you do is you give them enough, you let them buy in and get more shares to maintain the percentage that they had while everybody else, while the person who is doing the takeover gets nothing. So that means that each of their shares becomes worth less percent, a smaller percentage as more people buy into the new round. It's
right.
And that's going to tank your stock price, but it means that you'll retain the control of the company, which is the goal. It only works if investors think that there's something worth buying there. So the block of investors would have to have put enough money in that they actually diluted Elon's shares. So when they did this, they also offered him a board seat in exchange for promising that he wasn't going to buy more than like 10% of the overall outstanding stock, which he accepted and then backed out of almost immediately.
Kind of seems like a pattern with him.
Like, it seems like he says yes to a lot of stuff and then immediately changes his mind. Anyway,
I started to.
He listens to podcasts. He might find it, but I think he's probably hanging out with Joe Rogan instead of us.
I don't know if I should speculate about what his drug intake is at this point, but it seems probably profound.
I'm not. I don't think there's. Look. Regardless, the behavior is not, it's strange behavior. If you're a billionaire, you can do whatever the fuck you want. And I think he's aware of that.
So it seems.
So in April, he made this ridiculous offer to buy the whole company for $44 billion.
Yeah.
Which was even a premium at the time. The stock was still at like $40, trading at like $35, $40 at that point.
Yeah. So that was famously $54.20 a share, which.
It's the weed number.
Does he really think that 420 is funny, man? God, holy shit, this guy is such a fucking moron. Anyway.
The Ukraine war had been going on at that point for a little bit. The entire market tanked in May when the war didn't stop on schedule. And he tried to back out at that point, but Twitter's board was like, no, you're stuck to the deal. It's worth pointing out that when he said he was going to buy the company, he was like, let's just make this happen fast. I waive all rights to diligence, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I was literally about to ask you when that happened. Was that it? Was that right up front at the initial offer that he waived all that stuff?
I don't know the timing on that, but it was early.
pretty early.
Yeah,
because that later became a focal point of his efforts to back out in saying that they had not provided, you know, like sufficient data on numbers of bot accounts and so forth. Yeah. And they said, well, you have no entitlement to that because you signed it away. Anyway,
that's it. So Twitter's board was like, no, dude, you got to buy the company. And like when the price of the stock crashed at that point, like, it's kind of a bummer that Twitter's board was like, hey, he's offering $10 a share more than we're trading at right now. Our fiduciary duty as if you don't know, if you're on the board for a company or you're the CEO of a company or whatever, your goal, you have a responsibility, a legal responsibility to do what makes money for the company. It's one of the hallmarks of American capitalism. And it's probably bad, just to be clear. I mean, there's no probably, but it's almost certainly bad. But it means that you have to represent the best interests of the shareholders, and that the shareholders looked at this and like, look, man, we've been doing this for a long time. We have no idea what nothing we can do is going to make more money than Elon just buying the company.
Totally.
Yes. A real bummer.
Everybody who owns stock in this came made out like an absolute bandit.
Yeah. So when the stock crashed in May, he immediately tried to start getting like he clearly was in trouble because he was going to pay he was already paying a premium for the company. And now he's paying an enormous premium for the company, right? When this stock is trading at $22 or $32 or something like that, he's going to make a buttload of money for everybody that's outstanding. So in July, he tried to get out of the deal. They had a court date set for October. During this time, there was a lot of discovery and we got to see a lot of text messages from billionaires. I don't know if you have any excerpts, Brad, but
I've got the document here.
I have to imagine that his billionaire friends were as pissed off about the text being revealed because it's all of the conversations about what he should do with the company and how he should manage it and things like that.
I mean, quite literally, there is talk about the suspension of the Babylon Bee from Twitter in here.
Yeah.
Like this is where it seems.
What's the Babylon Bee, Brad? It's an all right news. It's
like bad right wing, The Onion.
Okay.
Anyway, you do get the sense from reading. I mean, there are texts in here between him and his ex-wife and him and Jack Dorsey and him and one of the co-founders of Palantir, Joe Rogan, all kinds of people. Anyway, you really get the sense from reading this stuff that he actually is serious about the free speech stuff or and I use that term in some sneer quotes, let's say, but like the, you know, his conception of it, he actually believes that stuff. Like it's not so like, you know, you've been seeing some conspiracy theories floating around about like, oh, he's trying to destroy the digital public square to pave the way for, you know, autocracy, or he's cozying up to whatever foreign regime or whatever. And like, maybe he does have some like lizard brain level desire to do that stuff. But I don't think there's like some calculated plan to destroy Twitter here. I think he actually does. I think he really does have these shallow ideas about this stuff that he claims to.
It's interesting because I'm looking up an article here, so I don't mess up the names. But Mike Masnick of Tech Dirt did a series on the I'll actually just post the links in the show notes so people can find them because they're worth reading if you care about this stuff. He actually went through, hey, here's why Twitter is the one that was good at free speech of the social networks, because most of the other sites just ban you for saying things that are unpopular. Whereas Twitter has spent a fair amount of money and time, like their chief legal officer, I guess, who was one of the people that was immediately sacked, had spent a lot of time testifying and fighting against the Section 230 reform stuff and all of the things that made Twitter a haven for speech. So anyway, I think the thing that became clear is that what Musk thinks is free speech and what is actually free speech as determined by years of Twitter, like having to deal with it, like free speech is a hard problem. Just to be clear, it's the thing about free speech. And this is a thing that people who listen to this show, I assume, know, is that the First Amendment doesn't protect you, doesn't let you say anything to anybody anywhere on whatever medium you want. It just says that the government can't say, yo, you can't say that. Like, that's it. Like, corporations that host stuff, anybody who's hosted a message board is familiar with the phrase, well, free speech doesn't exist here. What speech I allow in the message board is the speech that is what we're going to have here. And he has the edgelord. I'm a freshman in college and I just got access to the internet in 1993. Yes. I can say anything I want anywhere.
That's what I meant about the absolutism. And that is exactly it. Like, it absolutely feels like a very, very early Something Awful poster when that forum was dominated by like Bush era libertarian type view of things.
Yeah. And so the thing, the Mike Masmick wrote a bunch of things. One was like the, hey, here's all the stuff that Twitter actually does to protect free speech in a way that Facebook and TikTok and the other companies that own social media don't. But he also posted this thing that was a speed run for content moderation learning curve, which is again, familiar for everybody who ran a message board at some point. Level one is, hey, we're the free speech platform. Anything goes. And then the response to that is, hey boss, we're getting reports that there are child sexual exploitation and abuse images and videos on the site. Oh yeah, we should take that down. Level two, we're the free speech platform, but no child exploitation. Boss, there's a huge stack of emails from Hollywood saying something about DMCA takedowns. Oh, right. Copyright infringement is bad. Get rid of that. We're the free speech platform, but no child exploitation and infringement. And it just goes on like this for like 35 levels. So like, like, yeah, everybody's pissed off at you all the time when you run this. So like that, one of the metrics of like video, like when I was reviewing video cards, if the AMD people and the NVIDIA people were equally pissed off at me, I knew I was doing my job right. This is the same thing. Like if the free speech people and the right, if the right wing and the left wing are both pissed off at you because you're doing a shit job, they think, that means you're probably okay. If one side really likes you, you've messed up. Anyway. So he tried to get out of the deal. They were going to go to court. The sale, they ended up at the last minute, right before they went to court. I assume he talked to a lawyer who was like, hey, you're going to have to pay in addition to the difference in the stock price to get out of this. Like my assumption is that some lawyer at some point was like, hey, look, you can get out of buying this, but you're going to have to pay $30 billion to do it, or $10 billion to do it, some enormous amount of money versus the $1 billion that he would have to pay if he backed out of it before. Cause that was another part of the sale contract. I forgot about this, is that because he had agreed to be on the board and then backed out, they put a clause in that was like, hey, if you back out of this one, you owe us $1 billion plus the differences and costs. So anyway, the point is, it was probably cheaper for him to buy Twitter than to not buy Twitter. So they closed the sale on October 27th. The stock was delisted and then shit got really crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of shocking how fast it went from he's trying to get out of it to he's being forced to buy it to he's in there with a sink to he has fired all the executives.
Let that sink in, Brad.
To he has cut half of the workforce to Mario is flipping off the entire internet from what looks like Nintendo of America's official account.
That was
like,
verified. That was a real account.
It all happened so fast and there's so much and I don't know if I can go through it all. I would love to recap everything in order, but it's fucking impossible.
Well, okay. So the big ones, the sync thing was unfortunate, like not funny. Oh, it was a dad, maybe the worst dad joke I've seen in a while. But so they were like, I was trying to break it up into multiple phases. There was an early phase. Well, okay, first off, he came in and he booted the CEO and the C-suite basically entirely on the first day. I think like two people survived that. It was
that was his first real big move, right?
Yeah,
like the day he came in, he fired all the executives.
It seemed like everything was. There was no internal communication, so it's not like he let people know what was going on who worked there. There was all sorts of weird code review stuff where they were asked to print out the code they had contributed and then maybe not don't do that and shred it instead. And
right. God, I forgot about that one. Yeah, this again, there was so much. I'll put this in the show notes. I'm referring to a timeline that IGN posted of kind of the main bullet points, which are, for, like you said, for example, 27th is the day he walked in with the sink. 27th is also the day he fired all the executives, but I guess this is the point I'm trying to make. Like, the code review at the time was complete insanity, but there has been so much subsequent and more intense insanity that has like completely fallen out of the collective memory. Well, right.
Yeah. But I mean, the code review is really telling to me, because that's one of the things that's like, hey, for somebody who's worked in technology for 23, 4, 5 years at this point, he's missing a core. Like there's a fundamental arc to software developers where in the beginning you don't write much code, then you get good at writing code and you write a bunch of code. And then as you become more and more senior, you get put onto harder problems, which means you probably write less code as somebody who's been doing this for 15 or 20 years than you do early on. but you understand how the architecture works, or how, you know, you're working on free speech problems or like naughty hard problems. So it's like what he's saying by writing by, is he saying, I'm only going to keep the people in the middle of that path. Like when I have to sack people, when I'm laying people off, because as we all know, the best way to cut costs at a company that's losing money is to fire all the people that understand how the thing works.
Of course. And also keep it running. It's come out in the last few days that he fired 80% of, like, I don't know what the name for the department is, like site, like reliability ops, engineers and ops, yeah. Like the people who actually maintain all the systems and keep them running. And sure enough, I don't know if you've seen it, but I absolutely have seen numerous examples of functionality just breaking on Twitter that you haven't seen in years, like yeah. replies failing to load in and all kinds of weird little stuff, like retweets fell back. Apparently they had a fallback mode on retweets to fall back to, remember the original style of retweets.
Wait, was it RT colon?
When people did it manually and they just wrote RT and pasted somebody's text in. Wow. Like it fell back to that for like half a day last week. Like things are breaking, and most of the people who were there to keep things from breaking or fix them are no longer there.
Well, yes. Okay. So he fired the executive team. And then that period after that was categorized by friends of Elon posting polls that seemed to be affecting policy changes on the site. And also, after the Paul Pelosi attack, the weekend after he bought Twitter,
God, I forgot about
he posted
that.
Some fake news about,
yes.
like not just questionable resource, but like a site that just posts lies.
Right. Like if there's, it's not questionable that site thrives on conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very documented.
And replied to Hillary Clinton, like mate was proud of himself.
Right. Yes.
So up until that point, only GM I think had said, cause the important thing to think about at this point is Twitter makes all of its money from ads prior to October 27th, right? Like they have a tiny number of Twitter Blue subscriptions. There's a little bit of money that goes through like the super follow stuff, but compared to advertising, it's a drop in the hat. So GM said, hey, we're gonna pause ads on Twitter for a little bit. It's important to understand where Twitter falls in the advertising market as well, because without that highly specific direct targeting, there's a thing that Facebook and Instagram and the Facebook companies do where, you know, Nike has a Facebook cookie on their site, and they know when you go and look at a pair of shoes on Nike's website, Nike will know and Facebook knows. And Nike's like, hey, this person was interested in a pair of shoes. We're going to flood their feed with ads for this shoe and shoes that are adjacent and close to it to see if we can find the exact shoe that they want to spend money on right now. Twitter doesn't really allow that kind of advertising. It doesn't enable that kind of advertising. So Twitter is much more brand advertising. Like Facebook is very transactional. It's like, hey, you need to buy something. We're going to put that thing in front of you. And we're going to, if Nike doesn't buy the ad for that shoe customer, New Balance and Adidas are right there ready to go, man.
Right. So targeted is the word.
Yes. Hyper targeted. Twitter is much more about brand advertising. So companies like Procter & Gamble that make toothpaste and laundry detergent and shampoo. And I can't remember the new name of the company that owns Kraft, but the company that owns Kraft owns Nabisco and Oreo and all sorts of cereals and stuff like that. General Motors and Ford car companies are in the same boat. And because Tesla doesn't advertise, Musk doesn't believe in advertising. He spent his whole career not learning how this shit works. So when he comes out in the morning and immediately posts a conspiracy theory website
about an attempted political assassination.
Yeah. About something that like the advertisers are like, oh shit. And at the same time, there was a massive increase in the rise of hate speech on the platform. Cause the moment Elon took over, the racists and the shitbags came out and started posting all sorts of horrific stuff again, cause they assumed that their boy was in and it was cool.
Yeah. At exactly the same moment that moderation and enforcement were in the process of being gutted.
Yeah. So, and while all this is going on, they're posting cutesy polls asking like whether advertisers should support free speech. The advertisers continue to pull their ads from Twitter at this point. Mm-hmm. Like
they're also, this is another example of type stuff that will get lost in the shuffle, but there were people that worked in advertising at the time. There was both anonymous reporting and also a couple of them actually came out and tweeted about it directly. Like he had a big conference call with advertisers a few days in.
Yeah.
That apparently was an absolute disaster. Like, he clearly had no plan whatsoever for how to execute any new strategy or how to address any of their concerns. And like, some of the reporting was that like some ad reps at some companies were literally canceling future ad spend while that call was still going on. Like, they were so astonished at what a mess, what a clown show it was.
Well, and I was gonna say, the other thing to remember is we're in a soft economy going into a recession, it looks like, right? And the first thing that goes in a recession is always brand advertising, right? Like, you transactional advertising makes sense because you're like, okay, this sale cost us a dollar to make. So we make $80 on the shoes. It cost us a dollar for the ad. We'll continue spending money on transactional ads. That makes sense. Brand advertising, they're like, we have no idea what the return on this car ad on Twitter is. You know, a tiny percent. Nobody clicks on ads on Twitter. Nobody clicks on links on Twitter at this point. It's just staying inside the it's like watching the washing machine go around in there. So it's he's giving them an excuse to publicly look good by doing something they're already probably inclined to do. Right. So the advertisers are going to jump. It's like rats from a sinking ship at this point. And out of the tweet, out of the poll tweets comes the Twitter blue / verified thing. It's interesting because I talked to some friends who ran message boards in the 90s. I talked to people from my past. Like, you'd mentioned low tax earlier and something awful, literally speed running the how do we make money on message boards at this point. And I think around this time I tweeted something like, hey, man, the secret of social media isn't that the posts are the content. It's that the moderation is what you can sell, because advertisers never, ever, ever want to have their expensive brand ad up against a picture of some guy's junk or something horrible happening to somebody. Like, they don't want to be associated with the worst day of somebody's life ever. Right.
Well, you know, once they cross that bridge, maybe they should just go all the way and let you pay to change other people's avatars and put red text on their profiles.
Well, so I was gonna say that's gotta be coming. So,
yeah.
Before
we get too far ahead, I think this is also around the time that he started publicly blaming, you know, woke activists for the ad pulls.
Oh, yeah.
And not corporations being skittish about their brand safety.
Yeah.
At
that point, one of the woke activists who runs the Ads for Democracy group had publicly tweeted, we haven't done anything yet.
Right.
We just were sitting here watching to see what was going to happen and decide if we needed to do something. And you took care of it for us when you started tweeting conspiracy theories.
I mean, it's astonishing how, God, I shouldn't even. Reading Twitter replies makes me want to stab my eyes out these days. Like, it's really upsetting how effectively those narratives catch on. Like, people have no idea what is actually happening. Like, they just are so primed to believe, like, you know, whatever. Twitter is a cabal of social justice warriors silencing free speech. Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like, the attachment to narrative has completely supplanted attachment to reality at this point.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about, I wrote a blog post about this the other day, and I was thinking about it. The time that Twitter was best was when Twitter didn't push anything that was from outside of my people I follow into my feed. So, like, before trending topics, before you could really retweet stuff from other people's feeds into your feed, before you saw a bazillion replies on every publicly trending post, like, it was just me and people I knew and people I was interested in their work.
Yes.
Kind of shooting the shit. And it was a lovely experience. It was like, I've coasted for 10 plus years on how good that was in the early 2010s. Anyway,
so not only did he, you know, blame the loss of ad revenue on the leftist boogeyman and all of his sycophants ate it up, he also was going, and also, again, at the same time, I was like, the literal ad people are out there talking about why they pulled their ads. You still believe this bullshit? Anyway, like, I assume you saw that tweet about nuclear name and shame. Mm-mm. Like, at some point, people were complaining about the, you know, what was going on. He basically said, like, yes, there's going to be a nuclear naming and shaming of the advertisers who are undermining the business.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, oh, yeah, great. Like, the people who are voluntarily pulling their money that are destroying your revenue, it's probably a good idea to threaten them. I'm sure that will make them come back.
Brad, the First Amendment means that you have to spend money on a billionaire's website that you don't want to.
The chilling thing is that this was directly prior to the midterms when everybody thought that the Republicans were going to take firm control of Congress. And there were, like Mitch McConnell's former chief of staff was out there basically saying, like, we're going to haul these companies in front of a congressional committee next year. You know, like there's some like genuinely chilling stuff being said politically about the companies who were pulling out. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I don't think it's. Again, I said this earlier, and I'm going to explain it. The idea that you could moderate content at the scale of a social network is what allowed social media to be able to sell ads, right? Like without Procter & Gamble, Nabisco doesn't want an ad for Oreos across from some guy calling somebody the N-word ever. And if your platform can't guarantee that that's not going to happen, they're not going to spend money with you. Whether it's not about free speech, it's just really straightforward.
Yes. Anyway, sorry, we were moving into the verification stuff.
Yeah. So the verification thing is when it really became it went from like train wreck to farcical clown show. He gave a 7-day project and he was like, hey, the verified check mark is going to go to everybody who signs up for Twitter Blue. Now, Brad, you and I both have check marks. Mm-hmm. I got a check mark because I thought it was really funny. Realistically.
Sure. I got mine because the entire, I started to say entire company, which is not right, but the games group got them.
Every public facing person in the game in like journalist got.
Yes. Yeah. And I think there may have been an ad buy involved. Like it was just literally like, hey, like we're doing enough business with Twitter that we can just get everybody verified. Like send us your info. I was like, okay, sure, whatever.
So it's not always tied to ad buy. Like if you have an agent and your agent can do that, like basically the point of verification, aside from me thinking it's funny that I'm verified because my name is Will Smith, people get confused and
when did you get yours? Was it very early?
Like 2015, 2013. I don't know. It was before you could do the public application, but it was after. It was when I was at Tested still. So it was maybe it was 2012. I can't remember.
Yeah. The point is that verification serves a functional purpose.
Yeah.
Regardless of how frivolously they started granting it later. Like the point is you're enough of a public figure that it serves you and the rest of Twitter to prove that you are who you say you are.
Yeah. And then it also gives you access to some filtering tools that now everybody gets those, but you didn't get them for a long time.
That is the case. And I remember thinking that was really shitty when I got verified and noticed that I was able to much better control the amount of bullshit coming at me.
Yeah.
And thinking like, boy, that sucks that everybody doesn't have this, but yes, that eventually they did.
Yeah. So he basically said 7 days, we're going to change Twitter Blue. You're going to get the verified check mark. At this point, it became clear that the other thing that people should understand, if you don't pay a lot of attention to Twitter, is that normal people realize that the blue check mark means, hey, this person is who they say they are. Crazy right-wingers, right-wing, like alt-right people think that it signals like media elite or left-wing West Coast liberal, coastal liberal. It's unclear to me exactly what it signifies, except for that it's like, hey, these people are better than us.
Right. And that correlates with what I was saying about like entire media outfits were just getting their whole staff verified. Yeah. And so like here is like some assistant editor making $30,000 a year living in a shoebox is verified. And you think this is a coastal elite.
But and just to be clear, the verification stuff started because there was a real impersonation problem early on Twitter. Like the reason Shaquille O'Neal's Twitter account is Real Shaq is because he came to Twitter. He was the first. I'm picking on Shaq because he's the first celebrity I remember on Twitter. He came to Twitter because he heard about somebody impersonating him on Twitter. And he's like, hey, man, that thing sounds pretty fun. I'm going to go do that. And then he started posting Shaq, the kind of shit you see on basketball games when he's doing the halftime show on Twitter. It was really good. It was funny. It was like made him feel like a human being instead of like a larger than life public figure. And that kind of opened the floodgates. So there was a period of time where there was a mixture of actual celebrities, actual politicians, actual government entities, and people parodying actual politicians and government entities. The only way you could tell them apart was that the parody ones had to have parody written somewhere in their profile, which nobody ever looked at. So it was a shit show all the time. Anyway, they rolled out the check mark as a result of that. It originally was really hard to get. Then it was slightly less hard to get. Then it was impossible to get for a long time because they just stopped doing it. And then it became really, really easy to get later on. So Elon takes this thing that's designed to say, hey, this person is who they say they are. This entity that you're seeing on the website, the picture, whether it's Nintendo or me or, you know, Tucker Carlson, this person is who you say you are, and says, we're going to give this to everybody who pays at first $20 a month. Because yes, it's until, like, how much could a banana cost? $20?
Yes, until Hero of the People, Stephen King, intervened.
Yeah. And then it comes down to $8. And like, meanwhile, while this is happening, all the people with actual that are verified are like, this is fucking stupid. I'm not paying $8. I'm here. Like, I'm providing, like, Stephen King's argument was cogent. I'm providing value to you. Every other platform that I can, like, if I had a Substack right now, I could be charging money for this, right? Why am I here making free content for you when you're going to charge me to use your thing? Fuck that.
Yeah.
Which just to be clear, that's a thought we've all had on Twitter for many times over the years. He goes on with it. A bazillion people tell him it's a bad idea. The advertisers are, meanwhile, the five that are remaining are running like hell. And it goes live. And what happens immediately, Brad?
Oh my God. A writer I know at one point said you could not write this, and they are absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
100% correct. Like, the bedlam that has ensued since that change went into effect is, like, beyond parody. Like, just, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it was, it was exactly what you expected to happen. Like, the biggest accounts on Twitter immediately were being impersonated with check marks next to their name and spreading all kinds of stuff that a ton of people took as legitimate.
Hey, Brad, insulin's going to be free.
Yeah, like, stock prices have crashed massively on Twitter hoaxes since this happened. A bunch of slightly more benign examples also exist. Somebody impersonated Valve and announced something fake. Somebody used Mario to flip everybody off from a real seeming Nintendo account. Like I said,
that Mario one was the first one I saw. I was like, this is pretty funny.
Yeah, it was the Valve one for me, which again, like, featured a pretty believable fake product announcement. It was exactly what you expected to happen, and it happened. And so the part, still my favorite moment in this entire saga, like, the part where I decided, okay, fine, I'm on board with the idea that this is too entertaining. Like, I was really not happy about the whole thing prior, and at that point I was just like, okay, this is a lost cause, I'm just gonna laugh at it. It was the point that they rolled out the official tag.
Oh yeah,
it was the point that they reinvented verification because they had just destroyed verification.
I mean, it's profoundly, it's just a lack of understanding about how people use things. Like, you know, like, Musk would have known that. I would have known that because we would spend too much time on Twitter.
Is it a lack of understanding, though? Because people were, like, tweeting screenshots to him of a bunch of the major hoaxes that had been perpetrated, and he was, like, posting laughing emojis at them.
No. The idea that. I mean, look, what this says to me is that his thesis is the only thing of value that Twitter makes is blue check marks, right?
Right.
So he could sell blue check marks to a bunch of presumably MAGA chuds.
Yeah. Like, the response to that whole thing could not have made it more crystal clear that it's all just about, you know, spite and grievance.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But even those people, even the people who are going to pay the $8 to feel like they're owning the libs or whatever, like, that revenue is not going to last. How long? I mean, you know, some of them will forget to click cancel and just let it ride. But, like, that high is going to wear off pretty fast, even if this program even comes back. And, like, after 2 or 3 months, they're going to cancel because nobody's going to care anymore.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's one of the most short-sighted moves in all of business I have ever seen.
It is a cell phone on the same scale of Microsoft shipping Windows 8 with a UI that works great for touch and terrible on desktops.
Oh, I think it's way worse than that. Well, I mean, that was
99% of computers are desktops.
Yeah. I mean, this you overnight completely devalued and delegitimized the integrity of your entire platform.
Yeah, there was a good post. I can't remember who posted it. But there was a good series of posts about the trust thermocline, which is an idea that I hadn't really thought about before. I mean, it's something I'd considered, but I hadn't. It's a good metaphor for it. And the idea is that as you have a thermoclines are sudden changes in temperature in the water. So like when you go deeper in the ocean or a lake, then it gets colder all of a sudden. And the idea is that when you cross one of those, that there are trust thresholds that are the same. And when you cross over one of those thresholds, that trust is gone and you can't get it back. Yeah. And I think we're well beyond that point with Twitter at this point.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, the idea is just a tipping point where people have lost enough trust in your platform that it's not fixable. And that they like, there was some component of that,
Eli Lilly lost $20 billion in valuation because of this.
There was some component in that concept of like the effort required to just leave the platform is now less than the effort to stay and subject yourself to something that you inherently don't enjoy and trust anymore. Yeah.
More so, and like, just to be clear, everybody's relationship with Twitter who spends time on Twitter is fraught after the Trump presidency, right? Yes. Like like the party stopped for Twitter when Gamergate started in 2014, 2013, and has gotten progressively worse each year since then.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I mean, I don't know when it was during the Trump administration, but at some point it became such a vehicle for propaganda and untruth that like its effect on my mental health was never good. But like once it got to the point where you literally could not believe anything you were reading and you were watching like very harmful mass delusion play out in real time, like it got to be really hard to swallow. And yet we all keep subjecting ourselves to it.
Yeah. People looking for the basements of pizza places that didn't exist. They turned off Twitter Blue after about 36 hours after it went live, after the verification badges went live.
Do you know if,
the timing on that was hard to find, actually.
Did the people who already paid keep the check marks or did they lose them?
That is unclear. I have not seen.
I know for a fact, you know, you can click into profiles now and click the check mark and it'll tell you if they paid for it or if it was a legacy one. So I still have seen people with the paid check marks around in the last day or two. So
that's good. I mean, I saw Nintendo's account still had it. So, like it was such a deluge. Like there's a channel of Discord that you and I are in, Brad, that was just, I mean, there's the TechPod Discord had a bazillion of them posted. It was just like a nonstop chain of, hey, here's the giant corporate entities being mocked with parody in the account name and a verified badge.
Yeah. Yes.
He made some statements about having parody has to be clear or whatever. And everybody made fun of him because he opened the week before with comedy is back on Twitter or some nonsense.
Right. That almost brings us to the present day, but I mean, there's some stuff we've glossed over. It would take 2 hours to exhaustively go through all this stuff, but there was the part where after they laid off half of the workforce within like 12 hours, it got out that they were starting to solicit some of those people to come back because they had not done any diligence at all in deciding who to get rid of.
Then there were screenshots from the Slack where the manager that was having to hire those people back was like, we're just going to suck the knowledge out of them and then fire them again in a few weeks.
Right. And there was a really like gross ideological bent to that screenshot that you're talking about that I saw last night that basically was like, some of them may not even like be okay with an Elon Twitter at all and stuff like that. You know, it's like,
and then there was also I completely lost the thread. I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. There's plenty of more material to go through here. There was the kind of all hands call he had with the remaining staff where people basically sort of asked him like, hey, what are your plans to form and rally all of us around a shared vision? And his response was essentially, I don't know. We're all going to have to be more hardcore.
Yeah.
That was the same call that he admitted to everyone that he didn't know how much burn rate or how much runway the company had left and that it wasn't out of the question that they would declare bankruptcy. This is less than 2 weeks in.
Well, I mean, because like from a pure numbers standpoint, the advertisers are mostly gone. Like I'm not even I usually block all the ads that I see that annoy me and I'm just getting absolute garbage like, hey, come click on our content farm for 22 pages so we can make more money than the cost of this ad.
Yeah. I think we may have neglected to mention, and I'm sure most people know this at this point, but due to the way the loans and the deal were structured, the company now has about $1 billion of annual debt to service.
Yeah.
So like they've got to cover $1 billion a year just on the debt on the purchase. let alone, you know, all of their other burn for operations.
And then the other thing is the people who work in who formerly worked in ops have been seem to have reliable information that the service has always been a little wobbly. Like in the old days, we saw the fail whale fairly often.
Yes.
But you know, the idea that Twitter is going to continue to be around forever is in question now, right, because it's unclear whether they have the people internally to keep the service going. Like it's complicated and it's heavy.
You're starting to see, like I said earlier, current and former employees talking about like some of the little problems with functionality that are happening and how those can no longer be addressed efficiently.
Yeah. The other thing, there's a fundamental, like I didn't go to business school clearly. But there's a fundamental approach to like him coming into this all hands and saying, hey, we got to get more money while he's torching the existing revenue streams. That's not generally how you do that. Usually you buy something because it already makes money and you're like, oh, we can make more money by doing this. And coming in and throwing out the existing revenue streams with seemingly no idea, like, I mean, it's possible there's some 4D chess happening here, but it just seems like he's in over his head and doesn't really understand how this business worked and maybe just like posting on Twitter, but now gets to be the star of Twitter every single day.
That's exactly what I've seen people saying. He bought Twitter so he could be the main character every day. Another thing I was going to mention just now, another thing you're seeing from remaining employees is I've seen several talking quite openly while they still work there about the fact that they are planning to leave or are looking like the people who are still there are being very blunt about like, hey, I'm available. Like I'm not planning to stick around for long. Here's my LinkedIn. Like I'm kind of shocking how little people seem to care at this point.
I think there's I think that there were a lot of people who knew he was going to lay. So we didn't even talk about the fact that he tried to screw people out of the severance and realized only after the lawyers told him that like if he didn't actually follow the law, he was going to be subject to way more fines and have to pay anyway.
Yeah. California requires you to either when you're doing mass layoffs, give 60 days of notice or pay 60 days of severance.
Yeah. And benefits.
And yes. So.
So I assume that there were a bunch of people who were hanging out waiting because like his reputation in the Valley is that like I've had multiple people who worked at Tesla tell me that their strategy at Tesla was to stay out of his attention until they'd fully vested all the shares that they earned by working there. And then because the moment you come into his focus, you're at risk of being sacked at any moment.
Right. Yes. I've also heard similar stuff about working at his companies that he it's kind of exactly what his public impression or what his public persona gives the impression of, which is that he'll just kind of like waltz in the middle of important work with some cockamamie idea that he saw somewhere. And all of a sudden everybody has to grind to a halt and pivot to whatever. So executing whatever insane thing is that he just came in with.
I mean, he's really good at announcing. Well, he's not really particularly good at announcing stuff. He's bad on stage, but he announces a lot of stuff and ships some of it eventually. I mean, I'm still waiting on the truck. But it's just, I don't know. Like the number of people, the engineers of the caliber who work at someplace like Twitter are generally good enough to get jobs wherever they want.
But that's the point I was trying to make. So they eliminated half the workforce.
Seemingly willy-nilly,
and the people who are there like I said are talking pretty openly about leaving, but then we also haven't mentioned like he eliminated remote work entirely.
Yeah,
like everyone has to come into the office 5 days a week now. They've eliminated a lot of perks like free lunch and stuff. Like that's the point that you were making. Like yes, we are heading perhaps into a tougher economy, but and like Facebook also just cut a ton of people, so like the job market for tech and engineers maybe is not as robust as it was, but still, like these people absolutely have better options than to continue putting up with this.
I mean, so the last time there was a recession of this scale, the people who got laid off went and started companies like Google and Facebook and Twitter. I mean, that was over two different ones, but like Google hired a shitload of engineers in the post 2001.com bubble when the bubble burst. Facebook and Twitter and the social media companies hired a bunch of engineers in 2007, 2008. There's going to be stuff for the engineers to do. The people who are smart have ideas for products and they're going to pitch them right now in the Valley. And like, they'll get a couple million dollars to get started. And the next wave of big companies will come out of this. Like the thing, I assume people were waiting to see if they got the severance package before they decided when they were going to quit. Right. Because if you get the severance package, it's like winning the lottery. You get 3 months, you know, you get 6 weeks, 60 days, 2 months.
I think they're paying 3 months.
Yeah.
Is what they said.
Yeah. I mean, compared to Facebook, Facebook actually laid off way more people, 10,000 people, 11,000 people this week.
Yeah.
And they gave I was kind of surprised. It was a shockingly generous severance package.
Yeah. It was like 6 months of health insurance for employee and family.
Yeah. And it was
scalable severance based on years worked.
But it started at a high number. It started like 3 months or something. It was a lot.
Pretty actually generous, I think.
And Zuckerberg took responsibility. Zuckerberg was like, hey, like, I can't believe it. Zuckerberg comes out looking like the rest of the Valley's got to be thrilled that Musk is taking over Twitter, because it makes Zuckerberg look like a benevolent overlord.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I read Zuckerberg's statement. I mean, like, I get, you know,
he sucks.
It seems pretty safe, a safe bet that he was coached through every word of that statement. But
look,
but the, you know, the proof is in the pudding of the severance, which again is pretty generous.
Yeah. Those people worked for him. He made the mistake. I mean, he could have taken a loss there.
Yeah.
But anyway,
the point here is that, like, Musk is doing everything humanly possible to utterly destroy both the morale and the effectiveness of the Twitter workforce.
Yeah. I think he understands how to post, and I think he understands how to engage an audience, right? I don't think he understands anything about how advertising works or how that business works. And it is shocking to me that and it's entirely possible that 3 years from now, we'll come back and we'll be like, man, Musk really turned Twitter around. It's like the number one place for, I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll see. He has what I would describe as a fairly cockamamie scheme to turn it into a WeChat style one app where you have fun money, money and messaging and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yes. I can't wait to put my payment details into this app.
Right.
Dude, we could literally sit here all day talking about, like, I've seen talk about, like, the people that were there to make sure that the tracking isn't provided to the wrong third parties.
Oh my God.
User tracking. That's no longer a safe bet.
I missed that they laid off a bunch of contractors yesterday by just turning off access to Slack and email.
Yes. They cut a bunch more contractors last night. I mean, there's the stuff where he was like trying, the FTC basically was like looking over their shoulder about whether their kind of consent decree about user data was being followed. And he basically personally assured engineers, like, don't worry, you won't be held liable if we're sued, which does not at all seem to be the case.
Oh, no. Yeah. Just to be clear, if your company ever says, hey, don't worry, do this thing that you know to be illegal or against the law, we got your back. Ask the lawyer if they represent you or the company.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then don't do it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good way to end up on the wrong side of the stick.
Yeah, we should probably move on and wrap up with the last bit here. But, like, yeah. I mean, there's all this other stuff. I mean, we're not finance people, but my understanding is, like, based on how badly the Twitter debt situation gets and also how much the value of Tesla stock continues to tank, like, there are scenarios where he can be forced to put up more of his Tesla shares as further collateral on this loan. Like, it's a gigantic mess. Like, this whole thing is just, like, astonishing to watch.
There's also the, hey, this is impacting his other businesses, presumably.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to get more, the FTC is going to get involved. It seems like there's other entanglements, and, like, I got to imagine, I mean, maybe the Tesla shareholders like, hey, this is actually pretty good. We want him out of here. Not paying attention to us for a little bit, it'll help the company, but it doesn't seem like that from the stock price. So,
I mean, Tesla's lost over 50% of its value since January.
Seems bad. Yeah.
There is no way to read the tea leaves and figure out where Twitter's got. Like, again, you could not write this shit. Like, you would get laughed out of the room if you tried to write a story about this.
Yeah.
And yet it's happening, and there's no way to predict what's going to happen next. But
okay. So if you want to know more about this, Casey Newton, Mike Isaac and Mike Masnick are all doing really good reporting around it.
Yeah.
Casey Newton writes a newsletter called Platformer. Used to be at New York Times. Mike Isaac is at New York Times, and Mike Masnick is at Tech Dirt. All good sources.
Yes. So the last little bit I wanted to go through here real quick is, like, what are the feasible Twitter replacements?
Oh, so, hey Brad, what's your Mastodon?
Gee, let me remember what instance I signed up on. No. Wait, I'm not sure I want to throw it out there yet. I'm not sure if I'm serious about using it.
Okay.
No, whatever. It's Do they start with an at?
It starts with an at.
Okay. And then there's also the at instance.
It's double at.
I'm at Rad Shoemaker at mastodon.content.town.
Yeah.
But I've literally never used it.
You posted that you were buying socks or something, I think.
No, I posted eating a sandwich because that is the canonical first tweet.
No, my first tweet was about mouse reviews.
That was okay.
Yeah.
But
you're saying that was Ev's first tweet.
Oh, was it? I just in my mind, like that's very 2007, 2008 Twitter use was just you post like eating a sandwich.
Here's what you're doing.
So yeah, like I made a little list here. Mastodon is an open source, essentially Twitter.
It's a Fediverse front end.
It runs on a federated instance model, meaning that anybody can set up their own instance of Mastodon, federate it to other instances that they want, and then you will get the traffic from those other instances filtering into your feed.
Yep.
There are all kinds of issues around it.
Everybody hosts their own instances is the big issue. And it's a little heavy as a hosting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unpredictable, like which instances are going to be connected to which other instances. There are privacy issues around like people that run the instances have more access to user data than they should right now.
Like we wouldn't do this, but we can read. You shouldn't use DMs on Mastodon. That's the TLDR for right now.
The instance operator can read the DMs of everybody on the instance, which is not
incoming and outgoing.
Yes. it's also, you know, like it is. I mean, it kind of broadly looks like Twitter from about 8 years ago.
It looks like TweetDeck.
Yeah, kind of. But like it generally the interface, like it's got the kind of typical open source UX deficiencies in a lot of ways. Like it's been really telling watching people try to, you know, leave Twitter en masse and figure out where they're going, and a whole bunch of people immediately bouncing back onto Twitter going like, well, I'm never messing with Mastodon again. There's no way I can understand this.
Well, okay. And then the other thing is because most people aren't spinning up their own instances to host their stuff. So everybody's going on the popular big public instances like Mastodon.social and stuff like that. And as a result, those are really, really overloaded and it's really slow.
Right. Like it's not been a good experience for a lot of people for pretty obvious reasons.
It's pretty good on the one that only you and I are on.
Yes, I agree.
We should open that up though.
Yeah. Cohost.org.
Yeah, Cohost.
I've been seeing people talk about, I mean, I made an account on Cohost a few months ago and then never touched it again, but people have been talking about it more and more.
Cohost is interesting. It's it seems like people who liked Twitter and Tumblr kind of smashed them up and made one thing that was a little bit of both.
That's exactly how I describe it, is it's the kind of follow and feed model of Twitter, but with the post format of Tumblr.
Also, Tumblr had a follow and feed model
I know it did, but that stuff is a little more central to Twitter. But the point is, though, the posts can be as big as you want and often are quite big from what I've seen.
Yeah, there's walls of text there. I don't know. I have a Cohost account, too. I also know some of the people who make Cohost. I like the idea of what they're doing. They've said they're not going to take money from anybody ever or venture money. And they're funding it on like basically you make donations, you get access to some goofy features, some fun stuff. Yeah. If you give them $50 a year.
Yeah. And I think if eventually it's in the roadmap to allow users to take kind of tips, like donations, contributions from other followers. And I assume they'll take a small cut of that.
Knowing the folks who are involved, that makes sense to me.
But it seems like their hearts are very much in the right place about what they're going for.
Yeah, there were some TOS issues, but I actually haven't paid enough attention to get into there. Knowing some of the folks involved, I'm fairly confident that it's. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the issues are. I don't really care.
Yeah, no. I mean, it seems very much on the up and up. Like it also it's fairly idealistic and whether that can survive the rigors of our hell world. In perpetuity, who can say?
Like it's. The thing that it's hard, like Twitter got to where it is now because of a 15-year process that it like of going like it was forged in flame. Right. and I think any of these Mastodon has been through that. Cohost is starting to see that, you know, the other things that didn't make it, the peaches and the what was the one that was just peach. For friends?
Peach.
Path.
Oh, I don't, I've never even heard of Path.
Oh, Path was good. Path was like, Path's whole pitch was, what if Twitter, but for like the 10 people you actually are friends with?
Hmm.
And it was like a place that you could post your, hey, I'm going to go to the blah, 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 the Corgi Day or whatever at the beach. Yeah. You, anybody want to come down?
Does Peach still exist?
Peach is long gone, dude. And then the last thing is the Blue Sky AT project. Okay, that's not the last thing. There's a bunch. There's like this Project Mushroom thing. There's a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, I haven't even heard of. Are there others?
Project Mushroom is spun off of another company. I can't remember what the other company does, but I haven't really got into that, so I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, presumably there are going to be a bunch of other potential competitors popping up. Like some tech journalists like Kara Swisher have been like hinting very obliquely at something in the works that sounds like a competitor to Twitter, but they've been so vague about it that it's hard to know if it's anything or not.
Hey, Brad, do you know how you pick the Super Bowl before the first kickoff of the season?
How's that?
Well, there's only a limited number of Twitter of football teams in the NFL, and you just post, I think so-and-so is going to win for each team, and then you delete all the ones that lose.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah. The point is there's other stuff in the rumor mill, but who knows what that stuff is. But Blue Sky seems like the other thing worth mentioning here that seems potentially very interesting, maybe if not for the involvement of Jack Dorsey, but everything else sounds like it might be promising. It started as an R&D project under Twitter.
Yeah.
To create a unique protocol to run Twitter on.
This to me sounds like, hey, we need an AWS, like we need to unify the back end for this. So
that, I don't know if that analogy fully holds, because AWS is entirely controlled by Amazon. Like the thing. So I looked through their documentation a little bit. They spun it off. It was an R&D thing at Twitter that then spun off into like a public benefit LLC.
Yeah.
They have documentation up about the spec of the protocol that they're still hammering out. I haven't seen this said. They have a blog, but like, I don't know if like, does this end in an RFC being submitted to the IETF? Like, are they actually that serious about making this an open protocol? That's what they say.
I think this ends with just it petering out and nothing ever happening.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm not talking about like the reality of how it plays out. I'm saying like, is that their goal? Like,
yeah, like I think it'd probably be a W3C, right?
I think it's the IETF that ratifies that stuff, I believe, but I could be wrong.
Wait, are they saying it's like an HTTP style protocol?
They are building, what they are building is called the Authenticated Transport Protocol. So ATP, or I think it's, I mean, the URL prefix is AT:// But what they're promising, what they are pitching is that it's an open protocol. It sounds a lot like Mastodon, except it'll be an open protocol and not just one code base like Mastodon is for one platform.
The idea is that Mastodon can connect to anything as well.
Okay. I didn't know that. So maybe it's even more like Mastodon than I thought. Like it also, here's another part where maybe some skepticism is warranted. Like the pitch actually sounds quite a bit like the multiverse, but for social media, because some of the pitch they're making is like, so essentially what they're saying is multiple platforms can be built on this same protocol and then interoperate, but they can each have like their own sorting algorithms and blah, blah, blah. But what they're saying is like, oh, your account will be portable and your followers will be portable. So you could just like move your account to another, to a competitor's service. If
that
you're not
sounds
happy.
Great. That sounds fantastic. I would love to move my account to another service now.
So like if this had been concepted 30 years ago when a lot of other protocols were coming about like this, it would be awesome. Like now, the way the internet and the tech business is now, I don't know for sure if it's fully trustworthy or not, but like what they're saying sounds interesting.
This seems, honestly, my reaction to this is it seems like when people who are making games and NFTs and doing blockchain stuff say, hey, you'll be able to move your game skins from one game to the other. And I'm like, that's really hard to do, man. That seems really complicated from the bit that I know about game development. So I
think that's probably the actual way to think about this is this HTTP or is it Bitcoin? I'm not sure which it actually is. Like they're making it sound like the former, but that remains to be seen.
And then the so I mean, this is kind of what the meta, because like the idea of Mastodon, when you join a Mastodon instance, you're not supposed to say, hey, I'm really excited to be here on Mastodon. You're joining the Fediverse, and the Mastodon instance is just the way you view that. It also is conveniently the only way you can view that right now that I'm aware of. The other thing that I don't know why they would do it, but people were, there was a day or two where people were talking about Zuckerberg spinning up a text fork of Instagram, dubbed InstaFeed, that's just Instagram without the pictures. And I, like, given the trouble Twitter's had making money on Twitter, I don't know why anybody would like mimic that business. But anyway, yeah, it's an interesting time.
Yes, it certainly is.
So I started a blog this week. Oh, nice. I decided I'm going to own my content.
Dude, I've been thinking for a very, like, a couple of years now that I really miss the way the internet used to be, meaning every platform was not proprietary and controlled by a corporation.
Yep.
That, like, that's why I get excited when I hear the word protocol, because, like, that's what it was in the 90s, right? Like, there were a bajillion IRC servers out there because it was just an open protocol and anybody could spin one up.
Yep.
You know, Usenet, you name it. Like, I miss the older, you know, it wasn't democratized in a lot of ways, but in the sense of, again, corporate control, it absolutely was.
Yeah, well, if you want to find the blog, it's at shitty.blog.
Sorry, what?
I made a shitty blog. It's at shitty.blog.
I didn't know they allowed cursing, and I guess they did. They don't care.
Of course they do.
In top in domains.
Well, no, .blog is not a naughty word.
No, you're right. Not the TLDs, but just in domain registration.
That's up to the registrar.
I guess so.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun setting up a blog. I haven't had a blog in a really long time. I got Twitter and I realized that Twitter immediately made me lazy about, like, why would I make a blog or a newsletter or whatever when I can just, you know, jam out something in the app on my phone and it's there.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is your blog. Look at this.
This is a blog.
Is this just like a WordPress template?
It's a WordPress template. It took about an hour to set up.
Man, I should do this. I went on a domain buying spree last year and I should use one of those.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I was like, hey, I have some domains. I you know, if another of the fine content town family of websites. We should start up a web ring. If you want to do a blog, we'll set up a web ring. And
all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
It'll be like 2008 when I left GameSpot and we all started Blogspot blogs that we all posted to about half a dozen times and then abandoned.
Oh, wow. Was that part of the, because that's what the Wordsmith, the AOL Engadget people did when they went to start The Verge, was they started a blog called This Is My Next that ended up becoming The Verge.
Huh. Interesting.
I feel like that was a thing that we did at that. Maybe they did it because of you guys, actually, because I feel like Jeff do a blog like there was a thing that as people started coming over. You all had standalone blogs too, right?
Like yes.
There was a thing that was Giant Bomb that became Giant Bomb.
Oh, well, that was they started a little blog just to have something to post on while the actual site was being built.
Okay.
But here I am looking at my blog from 2008. The very last thing I posted about was the was about Sarah Palin becoming the
Wait, you didn't even candidate. Post a you didn't even post a hey, here's the blog website I'm working at now post?
Oh, I'm sorry. This was after I started there.
Oh, okay. You're just keeping it real.
I guess I felt like I would keep blogging for a while after I had a place to blog professionally.
It turns out when you have a place to blog professionally, it's pretty tiring.
Yeah.
I guess that'll do it for us today. I'm posting shit that I would normally post on Twitter in like a long thread there. And also pictures that I make with Stable Diffusion.
Shitty.blog is pretty good.
I mean, it's a shitty blog, man. What can I say?
Yeah.
I feel like the expectations are managed.
Yeah, I think I am moving from I think I'm moving from a feeling of catastrophe and to be clear, like Twitter falling apart is a catastrophe for a lot of reasons.
It's
like
bad.
A lot of,
yeah.
Like it served a lot of very good noble purposes for a lot of people, and like to have that go away and for the reasons it's going away is awful. I'm starting to feel some optimism now though at the idea that like maybe something better can be built.
Yeah, well, and there's a freedom to starting new, right? Like I posted on Mastodon the other day that I was excited to not be to not have a post something and get five people that respond to everything with, hey, have you slapped anybody today?
Right.
So yes. That seems nice. Yeah, it's like, a unique problem specific to me, I realize. But
yeah, Yeah. And like, I guess what I mean is like at some point the feeling of loss will be replaced by the feeling of forward movement.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Ultimately, I hope.
Can I just say something about how fucking broken you would have to be to want to be the star of Twitter every day?
Man, I can't like, even
having had the tiniest taste of that. It's bad. Dude, you don't want it. No. It's not a good feeling.
I can't even tweet anymore. Like I have a hard time even participating in social media at this point, let alone having everybody looking at you.
Yeah, it's awful. Right. Anyway, that'll do it.
Yes.
We will be back next week with another episode of the show. Let's thank our patrons, Brad, because it's the time of the show where we thank our patrons.
Let's. Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons. As always, if you would like to support Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod, which is a 100% listener-supported show, you can go to patreon.com/techpod. Again, that's patreon.com/techpod. And for as little as $2 a month, you can sign up to join the fabulous Tech Pod Discord, or you can get access to our exclusive patron episode every month. Last month, we talked about questions. We didn't. What did we talk about last month?
Last week was questions.
Okay. You can get access to the patron episode or a multitude of other things. You can find that at patreon.com/techpod. And as always, we would like to thank our executive producer tier patrons, including Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, Andrew Slosky, Bunny Thorpe Snowfall Crimes. I wonder if it's snowing where Bunny Crimes is. Just Wedge, Joel Krauska, Twinkle Twinkie, and James Kamek. Oh, wow. There's a waning on the novelty names. That'll do it for us this week. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.